Pictet has been managed privately since its founding in 1805, meaning that our partners have dealt with the same challenges facing all entrepreneurs. Our owner-managers are themselves entrepreneurs who, like our clients, want to build an even stronger firm to pass on to the next generation. Over more than 200 years, we have built up experience and specialist wealth management expertise that puts us in an ideal position to offer independent advice. Entrepreneurial clients feel a deep connection with our partners as they can speak with them on the same level, business owner to business owner.
Of fashion today, amidst all the influencer, social media noise, and companies desperate to tie themselves to buzzwords like wellness and sustainability, there are many brands and designers who, for the most part, carry on with what they've always done. Those who are innovators and trendsetters, inspiring movements and making statements with their work no matter the year or what the industry says is trendy. New York-based designer Norma Kamali is one of those designers whose career spanning more than 50 years shows how she's often been years ahead of the industry and never one to conform. After landing a job at an airline that introduced her to the excitement of London in the 1960s, Norma was inspired to design, eventually starting her own label and opening her own New York boutique. From magazine covers featuring her swimsuits, the sleeping bag puffer coat for which Norma made her name in the early 1970s, designing for the likes of Whitney Houston and Farrah Fawcett, to Yoko Ono, Beyonce, and Lady Gaga, along with her flagship retail space on West 56th Street, Norma remains a staple of New York fashion. And many of her original designs and ideas are still relevant and being borrowed today. From her use of real silk parachute material and the idea of sustainability to comfortable, functional clothing which reflects the multi-billion dollar athleisure sector and the idea of unisex clothing and gender-fluid design. That, in particular, is something Norma champions today, citing the bold expression of the past that was lost amidst the devastation of the AIDS crisis. It's a period that also saw her move towards a healthy lifestyle, years before many of us were talking about green smoothies, spin classes, and self-care. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. For this week's show, it was my great pleasure to sit down with Norma Kamali at Midori House to hear about her journey. She began by telling me about discovering her creative side.
I actually was very fortunate to have a mother who was extremely creative. She was a painter. She made beautiful clothing. She could cook anything. She was very crafty with a saw and a drill. I mean, she saw no bounds. So that's what I believe. And that's the only thing I knew as a child. And obviously, I've carried forward like that. But I never wanted to be a designer. I just thought that could be the most superficial, ridiculous thing a human being can do. And I wanted to be a painter. And so as I grew older, I realized I had to get a scholarship if I wanted to be a painter. And my mother kept reinforcing that she would not support a painter or have anything to do with paying for my food and bed if I did that. So I went to FIT. I got a scholarship for painting at NYU, and I got a scholarship at FIT for fashion illustration. I thought that would be my practical fallback. My first job interview after graduating from FIT was just objectifying nightmare first experience at a job interview. And I came into the job interview with my portfolio. There was a man with his feet up on the desk eating a tuna sandwich, and he said, "Put your portfolio over there and come here and turn around for me." And all I could hear was my mother saying, "Get a job, get a job." And I turned around and I was so embarrassed and humiliated. I ran out crying and I just said I didn't get the job, and I never talked about it for years. And thank you to this man for making me so miserable that I decided I needed to travel to see who I was, what I wanted to do. So I got a job at an airline. And in the early 60s, I'm 74 now. I've been in the business for 53 years. And so this is a way, way long time ago. And so in the early 60s, the airlines were the hot, like cool, new, modern thing. So I got a job in an office at an airline, and I was working on a UNIVAC computer. This is an art major and on a UNIVAC computer. And I was fascinated by it. I have a real interest in technology. And so that was like, oh my, what is this? I love this. But the real benefit was every weekend for 4 years at that job, I was in London, $29 round trip. I was in London at the very, very beginning of what would be the 60s revolution. Mm. That inspired me to be a designer. So I found my path thanks to that horrific gentleman in fashion. And it was because of my experience of coming here and seeing the beginnings of something really extraordinary.
Do you think in coming to London and the upbringing you explained with your mother and that she used to make all her own things and was very creative,
yeah,
do you think those worlds meshed for you and you deciding you could set out and do your own thing? Because coming to London, you know, a different style, it's a different atmosphere. But did that really push you to take the next step then?
Well, you know, London, when I arrived here, was very gray. It was the stereotype of what, you know, Sherlock Holmes, everything is gray. It's misty gray. People are wearing gray. And so when I arrived, I was staying near the King's Road, and I went to Sloane Square and I asked this man if there were any shops and, you know, check and see what the clothes look like. And he said down the road, and I didn't see anything but art stores, and because Chelsea was really all about artists at the time. And as I walked down the street, there was a sound that I'd never heard, music that I never heard, because I was Motown, you know, we were in Motown world in New York. And it turned out to be a Beatles song. And I was like, wow, what is that music? And then I see this shout of color on the front of a store. And it went up the whole front of it out of the gray. It was like, whoa, I see the light. I was like a zombie going to the light and listening to the music and thinking, what is this? I found my home. This is where I belong. This is me. And so fashion prior to that was like Mad Men. You know, corseted, so not my personality. And here, this was the beginning of this freedom of skirts. Nobody had ever seen knees before that, and just not just skirt lengths and silhouette, but color and just excitement, experimentation, innovation. And that is my personality, and I found my home. I also connected to the British personality. So Brits are very sober and sort of, you know, conservative. However, they're a little wacky at the same time and eccentric. And that's me. That's totally me. So London was a great place for me to discover who I was and what I really needed to do.
At that time, 60s psychedelia, and, mm-hmm, you know, you had these amazing shops and artists, yeah, and Vidal Sassoon and the Beatles.
Just
and
the beginning.
Do you think that really played a part in changing the way things were in New York as well?
The world.
Yeah.
The world. Now, you have to understand, this was the beginning of a whole generation, the baby boomers, a huge population generation of baby boomers who are now going to change the world. It is so similar to what's happening now. The disruption that's happening now is exactly what was happening then, except we have technology now, so it's times 50. And that change was never going to reverse. We were never going to go back. It wasn't a trend. It was a movement that would change the way people thought, the way people behaved. And in every country, it just started here. And this was the place that it could only start. You know, this was, everything was festering here to make that happen.
There's a post I think I saw on one of your accounts recently talking about gender fluidity. And,
yes.
And you mentioned Mick Jagger as one of the people that really inspired that.
Well, he was one of many, quite frankly, who were experimenting with not only the sexuality of the time. So my generation in that time, we were much freer and more sensual, and we touched each other. We were always draped around each other. We were more experimental sexually. So the idea of having boundaries was erased completely with the baby boomer generation. And so the idea of being bisexual or not having to conform to having one choice was really sort of a subtext for everything that was going on. It wasn't, oh my God, what a big deal. But we didn't talk about it. We didn't care about it. So if Mick Jagger wore lipstick and red nail polish and was wearing feminine clothes, he was just hot. It wasn't like, oh, he's drag and this is, no, he was hot. And he wasn't the only one. I mean, obviously Jimi Hendrix and everybody else that was in music, but everybody was dressing that way. Guys looked amazing because they could go into Antiquarius and buy a chiffon shirt that they liked and pant that had embroidery on it, or wear women's things, and women wore all kinds of things too. There wasn't a definition of these are women's clothes, these are men's clothes. It was very loose. In my store, at one point, we reckoned that 50% of the sales we made were to men. And it just so was happening. And then one day somebody said, I'm going to count the sales slips for this week and see what's happening with this. And so guys were buying dresses, and not to dress like a woman, but to wrap the dress over a pant so it looked like a long skirt over the pants, or taking tops and wrapping the tops and wearing them and looking freaking amazing because it was creative, it was spirited, it wasn't sort of something you saw in a magazine, you had to look like that, or you want to look like that person so you're going to dress like them. That would be so horrible to do. It would be embarrassing if you looked like somebody else. You would never do that. AIDS came, ended it, completely shut it down. The fear and the fright of what was happening with AIDS, with people dying everywhere, friends just disappearing, and no cure for that in your circle, all of these people are dying, was so frightening that everybody sort of contracted and got very sober. All men were dressing like they just got out of the army. Combat boots, short hair, very sort of no femme anything going on. Now, I have a memory of AIDS because of my age and the people I was around. But most people, you know about AIDS, but you probably don't have a personal experience with it. And so that's good in a lot of ways, because now this movement is happening again. I see more and more guys wearing my clothes, and it's whatever gender he is, he's wearing it in a way that he wants. So it's not just musicians that are doing it, and it's not just people that are celebrities or influencers. It's becoming more and more. So my last photo shoot, if you look on Vogue.com, you'll see four guys who I had come in. Each one of them is different, has a different take on gender. Each one of them were told they can pick anything in the collection they want. They can coordinate any way they want. They can bring in their accessories and style themselves, and they can pose in any way they want. And the joy and the fun and the atmosphere in that period of time was so extraordinary that I'm going to do it again, and I'm going to film it the next time, because it's so inspiring, and it is so much that same spirit that took place earlier, but the continuation. So each of them styled the collection differently, and they look so amazing. Even women are saying, oh my God, these guys look better than we do. I mean, they just, the spirit is off the charts. So one guy had on a track suit, a sequin track suit, and he put a big hoop earring on. And he looked so hot. It was like a Mick Jagger moment. It's not like, oh, what is that? It's like, oh my God, so amazing. You'll see in the pictures that it's joyous. Wearing clothes, the fashion industry right now is so stressed on, is it going to work? Are we going to be okay? But the idea of a genderless definition of having a jacket that anybody can wear that wants to, or pants instead of a women's or men's department, is a real opportunity for the industry to look at a way to reignite something that should have been happening a long time ago.
That is absolutely fascinating. I was thinking about, when you were talking there, about sort of in past when you started out, it was perhaps the shackles of society and our idea of how men and women should dress. But now, you know, it seems we're organically coming back to this more androgynous look, or gender fluidity, or however you want to put it, and unisex clothing a lot of brands are selling. But do you think there's equally, you know, restriction today based on social media and marketing, and it's projected that we should dress as men or women? Is that a restriction today, or are you finding it that it's quite fluid?
I think it is fluid, but I also think that it depends on your take on social media. There are a lot of women who are afraid to be shamed. They don't want to be shamed for not looking just right, or in their circle, or there are influencers who have certain poses, certain dresses, certain looks that they feel they have to wear to be looking great. And I think that's very restricting. I think the more individual you look, the more creative it is, the more expressive it is, and the more it shows that there's a sense of self that you're confident expressing. When you have to look like everybody else, it's uncomfortable, and I think you project that. I think guys actually look a little bit freer and looser and more relaxed about how they dress. I think a lot of women are still concerned about looking sexy or looking feminine. And I really think it's a time, well, look at me, I'm actually dressed like a guy, but I feel very feminine. I don't think I project anything but femininity.
Mm. You have the Ramones kind of look going on today.
I love the black rock star. I guess. But the point I'm making is this is very gender fluid. You could wear this just as easily and we would be both okay, right? We both look very good in it. I think when you try to look too macho or too feminine, it doesn't feel like it's in the moment. It feels like a different time. I think when you can sort of slide in and out of it and feel good about doing that, because we're all made of feminine, masculine. You know, some days I'm more feminine than I am masculine, but I'm definitely shifting back and forth. I'm sure you feel the same way. Some days you're just feeling a different way. And I think you should feel good about expressing that. I think men that show their femininity to women are so much more appealing. So much more appealing. And I think for men, you feel comfortable being with a woman that doesn't have makeup on. I think it's not a bad thing. It's just nicer to be able to put your hand all over a face and not feel like there's a crisis and you have red lipstick and makeup all over your clothes. I think that that is now, and I think it's really a comfortable place for people to be. Social media is tough. Shaming is tough. Shaming in every part of our lives right now is just a horrible thing that's happened. But you have to be brave enough to stand behind who you are and how you feel.
Do you think there's a difference today compared to when you initially had success? Your styles were shown on the front of big magazines, Cosmopolitan and things like that. Do you think there's a difference now? Because I imagine there was a certain way that those magazines projected you should live or should dress or should be. Yeah. Is there similarities?
Oh, no, it's very different. Magazines were very powerful, and being on the cover of a magazine or being in a magazine was such a big deal. Now, I mean, you know, I did costumes for Beyonce for The Lion King, that video she did. And so that was so much more powerful than having any magazine. So that just virally went everywhere, and people knew immediately that it was mine, and I didn't have to say anything to anybody. I didn't have to get a credit. People just knew. They could find out in a minute. So I don't think magazines are as relevant. I think Instagram is sort of our new magazine with video and far more in the moment. I just think there's a different way that you communicate what you do.
Do you think there's still a role there, though, for that print? I mean, I'm thinking of a magazine like Playboy, which is trying to reinvent itself now, and other ones, if they'll still be as impactful in the world of, let's say, fashion particularly.
Well, I love that Playboy launched.com with Ezra Miller. Did you see that?
Yes.
In my jumpsuit, thank you very much, and high heels. I was so hot. That's, hello, perfect example. How do you get better than that? And again, I am so happy that my jumpsuit was on him in Playboy rather than the old stereotype of a bikini on a woman with rabbit ears. Do you see? That's a perfect example. Isn't that cooler? Isn't that more modern? And doesn't it tell you that Playboy is looking at things through a different lens? So a magazine can be relevant if it adjusts and reinvents itself. I think fashion magazines will have a really hard time because fashion is still so confused. If a fashion magazine really focused on fluidity, in a second it would be hot. In a second. I mean, if you just look at the pictures we took, just a little bit, and I'm one designer. Can you imagine if every designer did that? How exciting. That's really what you want to see. So it's content, you know, relevant content for the moment.
In this world of content, the consumer is also extremely demanding. And maybe we can look back at how that compares to when you first started out. But today, a lot of what people are demanding and what comes up on the show all the time is the word sustainability and what you're doing to sort of better your process and have an impact in the world. How has that been for you in recent years? Because you started out this way. You were making things from old parachutes.
Right? So from my sleeping bag.
Do you feel you're fighting a new battle now, or it's...
No, I think, sustainability is never going to be solved in a day, right? It's a process. So my nature is more about invention than sitting down and designing a collection. So if I'm sleeping in my sleeping bag when I'm camping and I'm thinking, oh, I could really stay warm in this if it were a coat. And I remember coming back and making a coat out of it and not having any waste. So that's my headset anyway. I do that all the time. But there are practices that you can change that maybe at one time you couldn't because just the way accessibility to certain things, and now you can. So 3 times a year in my company, each department has to come up with 2 or 3 ideas that can be achieved right away of how we can become more sustainable in our practices. I'm working on a project with fabric now and doing some testing with that too, and how I can be more sustainable within fabric that does performance, that can really perform. And so we've just recently changed all our packaging. So garments are shipped in plastic bags, right? They're packed so it's safe. They don't get dirty. They don't drop. They don't fall off hangers. It's really a super efficient way to do it. However, it gets thrown away, and then it's plastic being thrown away. So we came up with making all of the bags Ziploc, simple, so they're reusable. We made it a heavier, more sustainable, reusable plastic so that people can use it for traveling or for storing their clothes and to use it over and over again. Not a big deal. But the overall sense of our packaging, it does make a difference. And people who are shopping from other e-commerce sites are going to get a different product now because they can reuse the packaging.
as a business leader, because that is what you are at the end of the day, you've always run your own business. But with design through the years, I mean, business ebbs and flows and there's good times and bad times. But how are you enjoying it today? Are you still able to design as much as you want to? And how does the business get involved?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. It is so much of what you enjoy comes from your heart, your soul. I love what I do. I love having a creative life. I know how lucky I am. I respect the fact that this is something very special. I still love what I do. I don't do the same thing today that I was doing when I started or 20 years ago because you keep reinventing yourself to keep it exciting. The business aspect of fashion has always been hard. I never saw myself as a business person, but here I was all of a sudden, you know, having to be a business person in a time where women weren't running anything. And I didn't think, oh my God, I'm oppressed. Nobody, you know, I'm a woman in this man's world. I never even thought of that. I just thought, holy shit, how am I going to do this? I have to ask people for help. I have to figure out how to get this done. And so the challenge for me then was one kind of a challenge. The challenge throughout the years, there were times where, I don't know, am I going to be able to pay the rent? Like go to sleep crying, thinking, holy mackerel, this is so hard. But you sort of get through it. My latest sort of crisis point was about 10 years ago. I thought, I can't be in department stores anymore because they're going to take me down. And I have to figure out what to do. So I spoke to my CFO and I said, we have to get out of the department stores. And he said, like, I hate to clue you in on this, but that's basically how we're earning money here. And I said, I understand, but I want to start transitioning as we shut down one. I want to get onto an e-commerce site as we do another. I like, let's get our e-commerce site promoted more and do that. And it was 2 years of not ordering anything extra, reusing paper, not hiring a new person. Talk about tightening belts. But I will tell you, if I didn't do that now, I may not be sitting here now talking about having a business. So there are times it's self-imposed to prevent something from happening, or it happens and you have to figure out how you get through it. And you know what? It doesn't mean that tomorrow another crisis will not happen. Because I've been doing this for a long time doesn't make me immune to another thing that could go wrong.
Mm-hmm. I'm so curious as to how you spend your time these days as a designer, as a business leader. You're back in London now, a place you've known and loved to travel
right.
to for many years.
Right.
What's happening with you these days?
Well, I'm so happy to be showing and presenting my Norma Kamali Life brand, which is a brand based on healthy lifestyle. So there are three pillars of a healthy lifestyle, which is sleep, diet, and exercise. Under those three pillars, I will be presenting products that are inclusive and democratic for men and women and people of all ages and skin tones. And I'm not a designer that puts my name on something. I've been, after friends of mine died of AIDS, and I understood that their immune system was not able to keep them alive. I did a lot of research in the 80s and sought out people like Dr. Weil and some other very, very smart people who were proponents of proactive health, integrative medicine. And so I studied with them for many years, and I then opened the Wellness Cafe after 9/11. And now I see it's great that so many people are into healthy lifestyle, but I see an incredible amount of product now that may have promises that I feel strongly are not exactly the best thing to suggest. I also think that there's a race to find out what the newest thing is, which only gives you more stress and suppresses the immune system even more. And so the concept that I'm presenting is simple, timeless ingredients that work are always the best. So my skin line is for men and women. It's a cleanser, an exfoliant, a moisturizer, and a glow that is sort of like a moisturizer that develops like a tanner that gives you a little pop of color. And it's simple and it works. And so that's basically where I'm going with it. Mm. And it's so exciting, so much fun. But, you know, I'm starting something new. So there's a lot of scary, annoying aspects to it that make you crazy. But it's, you know, you can't just sit back and do the same old, same old.
And are you energized? I mean, you've, as you just said, for years have been a proponent of wellness and, yeah, and taking care of yourself. But are you feeling excited at this time?
Always. I mean, I'm basically an optimist. I always feel no matter how bad yesterday was, you know, today or tomorrow, you have a chance to make it better. And I have enough experience seeing that that could happen. I think for me, the more I try to stay with a healthy lifestyle, the better I feel. And I have so many things I want to do, and I feel I have plenty of time to do it because I've projected that I'd like to live to 120. And even if I miss that mark, I'm still going to have some fun times ahead.
Fashion designer Norma Kamali. That's all the time we have on today's program. My thanks to Norma for stopping by Midori House for this conversation. You can learn more about her shop, her new skincare line, Norma Life, and her podcast of the same name at normakamali.com. Thank you as well to our studio manager, Nora Hull, who mixed and edited this program. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.